Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
That's right. This is the Between the Ropes podcast. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Brian Fritz, Michael Wiseman. Appreciate everybody for downloading the podcast, listening. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, the TuneIn app, SoundCloud, all the various places that you can listen to the podcast. I promise that as we are taping this, that I will try to keep my full attention. But we are on a time constraint because me being a diehard, lifelong Cubs fan, the Cubs are going to be playing in Game 5 of the National League Championship Series coming up tonight. And as we tape, we might be running over the beginning of that, and my attention could definitely wane at that point.
It's definitely better than running over other things, you know? It reminds me of the possibly the worst show. We do a lot of really good shows together, Brian. I feel like we have a pretty good time.
Yes.
Joking around, whatever. But the worst BTR show that we've done in the Brian and Michael era, the worst BTR show in our history, the night the Panthers were playing last season in an overtime game.
Oh, you mean the one where you weren't paying attention and I had to keep reminding you, like, hey, what's your reaction to this? What's your answer to this?
I just started ignoring you and watching the Panthers game. Yeah, that was not one of my finer moments behind
you. You were like, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, yeah.
I'm pretty sure some guy gave us a review on iTunes that was like, this one guy's watching the Panthers game and he wasn't paying any attention, so BTR sucks. Dude, you suck. But anyway.
Hey, man, we all have our priorities. We love our wrestling, but at the same time, you know, we try to have a well-rounded life, and we have our loyalties to our teams.
There's a life beyond wrestling, yeah.
Yeah, which one person found out recently from me the hard way on Twitter.
Talking about the guy you blocked?
Yes.
Oh, Mr. Blocker. Okay.
I had to, because he called me out, and he was like, talking about SmackDown and was like, what did he say? He said something like, oh, I guess you just don't care about wrestling anymore, because I wasn't tweeting about SmackDown as it was going on. And I was just like, hey, man, you know, I can like DVR the wrestling and I can watch the game and watch wrestling back later. And yeah, he wanted no part of that. And you know what? He got me at the wrong time. And I just said, you know what? Maybe I'll unblock him at a later date, but for now, I just don't want to hear about it. And he went to Block City.
This guy, okay, so here's the deal. This guy's apparently a BTR super fan because he's one of the few people who actually uses the hashtag AskBTR and not for Big Time Rush, which I appreciate. So, you know, I think we need to give him a little nod tonight on the show. You can keep him blocked. That's up to you. He asked me some annoying trivia questions one time, and I did not block him because I'm a much nicer guy than you. But you should all go follow Nick at BigJuice8282. This is not an endorsement, but if you would choose to go follow this guy, we could maybe increase his number of followers from 5 to potentially 6 or 7. So go do that. And you know, there we go.
He caught me at the moment, and you know what? I had to make an example of him. And sometimes you just have to do that.
Gotcha.
You got to do that. So what are you drinking tonight?
Okay, wait for it. This is the Drink of Champions.
Ooh.
It is trademarked and registered. And this is the slogan behind the beer. Always brewed using the choicest hops, best barley malt, and rice. Anheuser-Busch, the original Bud Light.
Oh, my God.
That's right.
Why don't you just pee in a bottle and drink it, okay?
I'm pretty sure it's what somebody else did before they put this in my cart.
But yet you're going to gulp it down anyway.
I was looking at the beer fridge. I'm trying to find something new this week, and what I realized is I don't have a bottle opener in front of me, so I had to get the one with the screw-off top, so there you go.
Yeah, of course. Plus, between that and your beer fridge is filled up with your favorite stuff, and you wanted to mix it up.
That's what happens when you have a beer you like, and you just put it all in there. It's a Fat Tire in a can from front to back, and we all know I love Fat Tire in a can, so.
There's nothing wrong with that. You can repeat. It's okay. We all have our favorites, you know. You like a nice frosty adult beverage. You have a beer of choice. That's fine.
Here's the other problem too. I've been drinking more beers, like getting growlers and drinking them on tap and getting growlers filled up. So the growlers don't give us that nice little crisp sounding pop that's so radio friendly. So I mean, I'm having to the struggle is real, you know, trying to find the right beer. The struggle is real.
Oh, I'm sure it is. So, believe it or not, for the, I believe the second week in a row, this could be a record for us for at least some time.
Okay.
We're going to start off by talking about TNA Wrestling.
Wow.
Yeah.
That good, huh?
Yeah, so we all know that there are some heavy-duty questions about the future of TNA, and more things have been coming out this week in the ownership battle that involves Billy Corgan, Dixie Carter, Arrow Lux, Fight Network, their parent company called Anthem Sports and Entertainment. Originally, as we're taping this on a Thursday, they were headed to court earlier today. However, that court date got moved to next Wednesday. Uh-huh. And in the meantime, I think they're all hoping that they can come to some kind of a settlement to where they don't have to go to court. And remember, everything is sealed. And one of the reasons for that is there is a common belief that there are certain things, possibly on both sides, that they don't want revealed to the public. And there is really a belief that it could look very bad for TNA when it comes to possibly debt owed or business practices, something along those lines. So we'll see if they actually go to court and if any of these documents do get unsealed. But in the meantime, there slowly but surely could be some movement when it comes to the ownership of this company.
Don't you just know that, like, Vince Russo is somewhere? He had this exact story idea pitched to Dixie Carter 4 years ago. He was like, come on, Dixie, it'll be great. I'll bring in all the potential owners. We'll have this big stable, this feud going on between every company. And it got shot down, and now it's real life. Like,
hey, he's already had a big enough role in this company's demise, okay?
Uh-huh.
Because you can make an argument that Vince Russo, when he was secretly working for the company behind almost everybody's back, very few people in the company knew that he was working there. And one group that definitely knew, did not know that he was working there, was Spike TV. After they had said, we do not want him involved in this company. And yet he was. And when that got exposed, because Knucklehead sent an email that was intended to Taz and Mike Tenay. And instead of Mike Tenay, guess what? He went one short on his email list and sent to Mike Johnson of PW Insider. We can't even make this stupid stuff
up. So bizarre.
And it was notes about the announced team. And that got revealed that, guess what? Even though TNA denied that he was working for the company. And then even after that email gets sent out, it was denied by Vince Russo that he was working for the company. Later,
Johnson
that same,
sent it straight to Spike, right? He didn't even like take up. He was just forward.
He put the report out and flat out like showed it and everything. He had it down to a T, and Russo denied it. I don't know if he sent it to Spike, but Spike definitely knew what was going on at that point because they read the report. And, you know, and then like within that same day, Russo went from going on an all out assault on Mike Johnson and his credibility to, I apologize, and yes, I've been working for the company in a silent role. You know, we had agreed not to let this out, but it's out now. And you know, that wasn't the only factor that played a role in Spike deciding to part ways with them, but I guarantee it played a role. And since then, they have been, you know, fighting for their lives when it comes to, you know, finding a good TV deal and just trying to be stable, and it's something that's been obviously a huge problem for them. And
so what's the likelihood, let me ask you this, what's the likelihood that we end up with a four corner King of the Mountain match, contract on a pole? We have Dixie Carter, we have Vince Russo, we have Jeff Jarrett, and we have Billy Corgan all battling it out.
Where are the Harris brothers in this? Where are the Harris brothers in this? Okay. That's all I got to say.
We can make it a six-way King of the Mountain, right? This will work.
Is Judy Bagwell watching over that contract on a pole? Okay.
Oh, Lord.
My God. Basically, here's where they're at right now, because over the past week, we already talked about, you know, the different companies that are owed money. Like Billy Corgan is owed whatever amount of money. I've heard different things about it. I've heard it's probably between $1 and $2 million that he is owed. Okay. Aerolux is owed $3.4 million, but they are working with, you know, TNA trying to solve all this. But, you know, their former production company is suing them in the state of Virginia for, you know, $250,000 to $300,000 for money owed. American Express cut them off and is suing them for money owed on their corporate credit card.
Wow.
The state of Tennessee has a lien against TNA, and it's, and the funny thing is, you know, you can try to say, well, now it's, you know, there's a parent company, but it doesn't matter. Any other companies that's, you know, that, that is attached to it when it comes to business or whatever, they, you know, it's not like TNA can get off the hook by some kind of legal loophole like that. But the state of Tennessee has a lien against them because TNA hasn't paid taxes in the state. And because of that, they can seize property and they can do different things like that. So that's a huge problem. But now we're starting to see where exactly this could be going, because yesterday Anthem Sports put out a press release, and Anthem is the parent company of Fight Network. It said that it made a working capital loan to fund the operations for TNA going forward. And it says Fight Network has also offered to provide TNA with funding to repay the loans made to Billy Corgan and is positioned to provide additional transitional assistance to the company. So basically what they're doing is they're saying, hey, here, we'll give you the money, get Billy to take it and to walk. That way he's not involved anymore. And then we will give you some more money to make sure that the next set of tapings go on. I don't know what exactly they are getting out of this. Will they get full ownership? Will they get partial ownership? I think the big thing that they want is they want the TNA video library.
Mm.
The belief is that Anthem wants to do an over-the-top network like the WWE network, and they want TNA's library to kind of be the backbone of it. And I understand that that is a big video library from the standpoint that it's, what, 12 years worth of programming?
Right.
And I'm not trying to disparage TNA. But I think it's a very limited audience that says, you know what, there was this match in 2009 in TNA, and man, if only I could watch that again, I would pay for that. And I just think that's a limited audience when it comes to, I shouldn't have been doing the voice there, but I was. I think it's a very limited audience when it comes to people that are going to be regular viewers of an over-the-top network that will be watching TNA programming. And, I mean, there'll be some, you know, and there'll be others that aren't going to be in it for a limited basis, but I don't know what the end game is on all of this. I mean, I still look at TNA and you see all the different money problems that they have. They've got a TV deal that doesn't make them any money. The only money that they make are on international deals, and who knows if those are going to stay in place. I mean, for now they are, but you know, those can always be a little bit shaky. And they're still bleeding money. I don't know where they go out of this, what the end game is. Now, I don't know why you would want to own the company, quite honestly. I mean, I can even make that. There's a lot of people within the company when it comes to the talent that really want Billy Corgan to get control. But even with Billy in changing the name of it, I don't know where he thinks he can make money off of that. And that's the big question I have for anybody that runs it. But this thing is still a stinking mess. And they're not going to go to court until next Wednesday unless they get something figured out between now and then. And we'll have to see if Billy is willing to walk away if he gets his money or if he wants to have his day in court.
I'm kind of with you. I don't really entirely understand what the end game would be, especially for a company like Fight Network and for Anthem, their parent company. What do you do with the TNA library? Now, I get it. There's a lot of content there. To your point, who was looking up specific content from that 12 years, right? There wasn't enough. How do we say this? great content from that 12 years. I think that you can't put together the same kind of video packages. You will struggle to put together the same kind of video packages and content that WWE has made.
Right.
But just throwing all of that TNA history into a streaming service is not going to be appealing enough to wrestling fans, I don't think. You need something else. WWE Network is, yes, a library of content. And in fact, I went back and watched Brock Lesnar and Goldberg the other night because I could. But it's more than that. It is content created around the history that makes it rich and come to life. And I don't think TNA's history is rich enough for that kind of content to be created. Now, Fight Network could put it up with some of their other wrestling content, some of their other UFC content. But it's going to go for a bargain price unless they get some really – unless they get some really high-end stuff on there. WWE Network sells WWE pay-per-views, right? That's how they can justify $10 a month. And you and I talked a little bit about this earlier in the week and what the pricing structure could really look like if they wanted to milk that out. But Fight Network doesn't have anything quite that mainstream. So you're talking about what? Maybe a – what does UFC charge for their video library? It's $4 a month?
Yeah.
Right, $4. I mean, that's what they could charge, I think, for TNA and some of this other
hodgepodge. I think they would try to probably charge $7.99. I think they would try to go with a Netflix model.
Okay. So let's Netflix is $10 a month now.
I think I pay $8.99.
You went up this year.
Yeah, did go up. Okay, maybe it is not. Yeah. So I mean, maybe they try to go that high. I don't know.
UFC Fight Pass is $9.99 per month.
Right.
But you get some UFC is the name, and you get some other kind of exclusive content. I don't know that it makes a lot of sense. And again, I kind of hate to see them buy this out just for the library, but you know. Who knows?
I don't know. I mean, like I said, I have a hard time in thinking there's a big audience for people that say, hey, remember that one time that Jeff Jarrett hit somebody with a guitar, which was actually about 50 times? Or, hey, remember
the first
that
5 years of TNA.
Yeah, you know, remember that time that Abyss fell on barbed wire? Oh, yeah, that happened every other week. You know, I mean, there definitely are some standout moments in that company. I mean,
sure.
Remember
yes.
the first year of that company, if you take out some of the silliness, I mean, it was, you know, the backbone of that company at that time was the X Division, headlined by AJ Styles and Jerry Lynn. If mm-hmm. you go to, you know, the early years, once they came down to Orlando and had the Impact Zone, when you add, you know, Christopher Daniels and Samoa Joe and AJ Styles. I mean, that's probably the best match in TNA history when they had that. What is it, like 2005?
Wait, no. You're talking about the end, right before Hulk Hogan?
Yeah, it was before then.
It was 09, the fall of 09.
No.
Christopher Daniels, AJ Styles, Samoa Joe.
That was like 05.
No. Unless you're talking about an earlier match.
It was an earlier match.
Okay, because their final match before Hulk Hogan took over.
No. This is an earlier December match. This was a much earlier mess. That was Unbreakable 2005.
Okay, you're on different paper than me.
Yeah, that is arguably the greatest match in the history of that company. Okay. I mean, when you go back, there was a period there where, I don't know, I mean, when Scott D'Amore was booking, they were really good. I think even when Dusty was booking.
Turning like that, Point 2009 was what I'm thinking.
Yeah. There was a good match. Yeah, obviously. Yeah. I mean, there was some great stuff at the X Division that they were doing that was totally different. You know, we've said this time and time again, but I mean, they were doing well. Remember, they had a good TV deal with Spike. They were something different. They were an alternative, and they were a place where guys could, you know, make a name for themselves. And yes, there was definitely going to be guys that were going to use TNA as a stepping stone, and they were going to move on if and when they could. But there's nothing wrong with being the number two company, and there's nothing wrong with being successful and making money. But they wanted more, and they made the cardinal mistake of trying to do too much too soon and with the wrong people. And they did it with people that already had a bad track record that showed that, you know, they were put in a position of power previously, and it failed. And why they would be given that position of power again, and why they would do a formula in that company that was following WWE was ridiculous. And we said it at the time, and it's still ridiculous. And now they are paying the price for it.
Yep. I still hope there is some future for TNA beyond all of this mess, a rebranded company that brings together that talent in a more productive way. I cross my fingers and hope that that home exists for them after this. But I don't think it's going to happen unless you clean house of that management and start anew with somebody like Billy Corgan. Dixie Carter's got to go. This company cannot exist the same way it's existed before if it has any chance of a future. And I don't know. Maybe that doesn't happen. Maybe we go over to Ring of Honor now in New Japan, and that's where our secondary fandom exists. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think TNA is going away yet. I think they're going to somehow pull out of this, like Anthem.
And, as always.
Yeah, you know, and here's the other thing, too. It sure feels like Dixie Carter is still going to be in a position of power when this all settles, which that track record has come and gone. You know, I mean, we've seen that, and it's definitely time for a change there because we see where the position of the company is and now and some of the different deals and stuff. I mean, they need something different. I mean, just from, you know, this company has been hit with so many negatives, and it's so tarnished because of, you know, the reputation it has on screen and behind the scenes when it comes to business dealings. But, I mean, if Anthem does what it's trying to do, they can continue on. I don't know how much longer. It depends on how much money they lose and what the end game is, all this. I mean, my guess would be they want control of that video library. And if they could get that, and if things go really, really south, they'll just hold on to the library and the company will go away.
But doesn't WWE outbid Anthem for the video library?
No, not if a part of this deal, they get it.
That's true.
What if part of this deal is TNA says, hey, thanks for giving us the money. Here's our video library.
Yes, and then Anthem could conceivably sell it to WWE at a later date.
Well, they would hold on to it because they want to do this over the top network.
Right, but I'm saying if
something happened at that point where that network just wasn't working out for them, then they could say, hey, remember how you wanted this video library? And they could sell it, you know, and they would probably have to sell it at a pretty cheap price because I don't know how many other bidders there would be. I mean, there have been some rumblings of a couple of other groups out there that are interested in trying to piece together an over-the-top network with various wrestling companies. That's why WWE had that survey. And what they're talking about going and speaking with, you know, the Ring of Honor and TNA and speaking with other groups as well. You know, I believe they've spoken with Booker T's group. They've probably spoken with what's now MCW Wrestling, which used to be Maryland Championship Wrestling. Oh, I'll bet they've talked to them. I'll bet they talked to a bunch of different places. And because there's other people that are in that business that think we can put together a network and we can get the wrestling content that WWE does not have. I don't know if it would be successful or not, but they want to try.
Is that the strategy, I guess? Any company that's not WWE, their solution is to just buy up all the other indie wrestling
and do an over-the-top network. Yeah, like they would love to get like TNA. I don't know if they could do Ring of Honor, but like you get a Maryland Championship Wrestling. I mean, the Holy Grail, which you probably will never get, is PWG.
Yeah.
I mean, there's different indie groups around the country that have some names. And who knows, what if you were able to make group deals with some groups over in Europe as well? What, like Rev Pro and IPW and groups like that? I mean, if you could do that, then maybe you've got something as long as your price point's there.
But is there a demand? Okay, so first off, every time you say over the top network, I just imagine you saying over the top.
Our network is over the top.
I get what you mean. But
yeah.
Is there a high enough demand for all of these indie organizations for them to promote on a network in this way and sell it for a reasonable price point? I mean, Ring of Honor has been doing this iPay-per-view thing for a number of years, and apparently it proves somewhat successful for them, but that's not – they obviously haven't moved to a pay-only model because they're still doing other things on local networks and things like that. So,
I mean, I think, though, the whole point is – when it comes to demand, whether or not it is there, it is what are my costs in putting this together when it comes to just running it on a day-to-day basis? What are my costs when it comes to acquiring video libraries? And what is my price point?
Yeah.
Because maybe your price point's good enough to where you can get people to sign up and it can you can get a lot of people. I mean, there is an argument to, you know, both ways. Okay, so I make it cheaper. That means more people will sign up. But you know what? There's already been proven people will pay for something that they want. And if it's something that they want, and if you have quality programming and there's a demand for it, people will pay more money. So there's no point in saying, oh, we can get more people to sign up for $3.99 than we could at $7.99. You might as well price it higher. Plus, there's also a belief a lot of times, believe it or not, that when something costs more money, people believe it is more valuable, that it's worth more money, and you will spend it because you're saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to get what I pay. There is a big-time belief in that, and that's why prices are high in a lot of things, because people say, well, it costs more money, but you know what? That's because it's got to be worth it. You know, they're not going to outprice themselves. So,
well, this is the conversation you and I had earlier in the week, right, which is WWE has been chasing the subscriber number to the detriment, I believe, and I think you agreed with me on this, of chasing the content number. And what I mean by that is they're selling all of their content for $9.99 a month, and they're trying to expand their subscriber base by bringing in some external content like Ring of Honor or TNA or whatever indie wrestling is, and potentially charging more there. However, you're leaving behind this revenue stream that if you had offered the WWE Network for $9.99 a month, and you had had all of these pay-per-views, excluding the big four, right? WrestleMania, SummerSlam, quote-unquote Survivor Series, I get it, right? And Royal Rumble, I believe those four networks could sell, or those four pay-per-views could sell on their own yep. at a reasonable rate. $40, even if it's just $40, and your revenue stream is in addition to what you're making on the network, and you pay off the subscribers of the network by offering a NXT takeover event those months in the place of the big four WWE events. You still make the same money, because what's to stop me as a subscriber, if all I want to do is see WrestleMania, signing up next March for 1 month, I pay my $10 and then I unsubscribe, and then signing up again in August to September for SummerSlam and unsubscribe, come back again in November and unsubscribe, and then back again in January and unsubscribe. I paid $40 for the whole year, whereas I likely would have paid $40 for at least one of those shows and potentially bought more. Like the model doesn't make sense. I get why they did it that way, but I think they shot themselves in the foot with some long-term value on those other pay-per-views.
I totally agree, because I think what happened was they were just trying to be ahead of the curve, and I understand that. But you know what? I mean, remember, with pay-per-view, you get half that money, okay? So even if you say you do those big four pay-per-views, you add them up and say that's 2 million buys, and you're getting lowball at a $40 sell price, which is that would be a lowball. So you'd be making $20 a pop. That'd be $40 million you're missing out on. That's $40 million of revenue you're missing out on.
Yep.
Now you can sit there and say, okay, does that mean I'm not getting as much of a subscriber base to the network? I don't know, maybe, but I think that would be minimal. People that want to get the network are going to get the network, you know?
You're selling the network off of more than just the big four pay-per-views. Yes, I believe you're selling it off of having that pay-per-view every month. That definitely brings you in more subscribers. But you're not selling the pay-per-view off of – they marketed it as this, but you're not just selling the network off of WrestleMania every year. Because if you are, you're getting subscribers for 30 days and that's it.
By the way, I just shot down a fantasy trade in the middle of this. Can you believe this jackass in my league who thinks he's Mr. Fantasy Expert – just tried to trade me two solid running backs for Tom Brady.
Oh.
I mean, I literally got that trade offer, and I rejected it as fast as I saw it should pop up in my email. I mean, it took me about a nanosecond to reject.
So I want to touch base back again on the first off, can you send one of those running backs my way? Because I am hurting on the running back and wide receiver front. Good call last week on the starting quarterback.
Well,
because
Simeon didn't even do much until late in the game. He got like a garbage touchdown late in the game or something.
Yep. I know. So it ended up paying off big for me.
Good.
I won my fantasy game by 2 points.
Ooh, I like
so,
it.
Yeah. A little bit of tension down the stretch. But I have to start Simeon this week. Panthers are on a bye week, so we'll see what happens.
How worried are you when it comes to Cam Newton right now?
I am not that worried.
Okay.
If you watched him come to life last week, I don't know if you watched the game or not.
Oh, I saw the post-game press conference of 90 seconds where he acted like an ass clown.
I think it's a tough season. You come from winning from almost winning the world title, essentially, to kind of falling back down. And
no excuse for not being a professional.
That is true. I agree with that. And I hope that Cam Newton is still bringing that maturity and poise he had last season in the future games. But this is a really tough spot to be in. And the Panthers have lost a lot of close games. They haven't just been blown out by anybody. They fought back into games and lost. And that's really disheartening. So I think Cam is still a gamer. I think he's still a player. He is. You saw it last Sunday. He had to warm back up, but he came to life and had some huge plays. He's playing a little bit safer now. I think it's all going to work out in the end. The big issue for the Panthers is the secondary. It's the defense. That's it.
And your offensive line.
And offensive line, yeah. Offensive line is huge. Because
only, you know, like the keys to a good football team, an offensive line and defense.
Yeah, games are won in the trenches, right? And yes. Some people aren't playing well, but I don't think those people are Cam Newton. I think Cam Newton is playing to what he can do right now with what he's surrounded by.
Gotcha. Well, let's talk about what happened on Raw, and that was the return of Goldberg.
Gilbert.
No, this is Goldberg.
Gilbert. Yeah, he won that match against Goldust.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think it's pretty evident that I'm not the biggest Goldberg fan. When it comes to him as a performer, as a person, he's a really, really good guy. He really is. Even though he kind of got mad at me in that recent interview. But that's all good.
Because you said he wasn't relevant anymore.
What's that?
Well, people still know who
you are. I didn't mean it like that, and he knows that.
You only won 157,000 matches, but maybe the fans forgot who you are, Goldberg.
Can you remind me of those times you beat Jerry Flynn, like 5 out of 6 matches back in, 2000? But when it comes to his in-ring career, it is what it is. Obviously he's a star. And the way that WWE brought him back on Monday was extremely good. They were showing highlights of his career. And then, at the end of the show, they had him coming out and they did the whole walking through the back with a lot of the wrestlers, like watching him march, past them, marking out, including Big E with big eyes. So like, whoa, people were clapping and cheering. And he did the whole, thing where he stood through the pyro and everything. And he got in the ring. That was emotional Bill Goldberg. And you could tell that was a guy that was not given a script. He was given bullet points. He hit on every bullet point. He was emotional. He was raw. He was pacing. He was fired up. That dude was cussing as he got into the ring where they had to, bleep him, basically. Yeah. And he was snorting and you name it, man, snorting and sweating, fired up. And that dude was just so visceral. And he got in there and he said what he wanted to say. He talked about, hey, man, kids need superheroes. I never thought I'd have this opportunity with the game, but now I'm back. People have been talking about whether I'd come back for a match and face some Brock Lesnar. And I thought maybe I would rest on my laurels. But then I thought maybe I'd come back for one more. And then I believe the money line at the end wasn't just, Brock, you're not just next, you're last. Yeah. And basically saying he's coming back for one match, which who knows, man? Maybe that's even a mistake, or maybe he'll be back for more than one match. They could easily do that, whether he wins or loses this one. But that crowd was so into it. You can easily make an argument. That was the best promo that Goldberg's ever cut in his career. And the guy hasn't even been in a ring in 12 years.
he was in it. And I first want to say, has anybody in the wrestling business, besides maybe Vince Russo, ever done more with less? Like, you talk about Goldberg's debut in late 97, summer of 97, whenever it was. And then to be elevated to the point where by 99, he was the biggest name besides maybe Stone Cold and The Rock in the wrestling business. And to still have this longevity to him, it's just so impressive because the guy's taken 12 years off and he comes back and he's one of those guys. I put up Stone Cold. I'll put up The Rock, Shawn Michaels, potentially, that can take that long of a time off and still come back to that kind of reaction. So very few guys. He's in definitely an upper echelon of wrestling mystique. So kudos to him. That promo was killer. You could tell he loved being back in the ring. He loved the reaction. He was embracing it. He no-sold the fireworks coming out. So it was a special moment. I personally feel like WWE is hot-shotting the angle a little bit, right? We know it's coming off the video game. This is kind of the third year in a row. The video game has been used to prop up somebody coming back, like previously the Ultimate Warrior, and somebody coming back or to prop up a feud. I don't know how I feel about that entirely, but I feel like WWE is hot-shotting this angle. They're going to give him a retirement match at SummerSlam, and I think you're losing potential. At Survivor Series, and you're losing the potential here for a fun little run for Goldberg to cap off his wrestling career. Because if this is his last run, I think you should do more for it. I don't think he needs to be on TV every week, but you bring him back for a rematch at Survivor Series that he can lose to Brock Lesnar, because Brock Lesnar does not need to lose. And then he says, you know what, I lost that match, but I still think I have a title run in me. Puts himself in the hat for the Royal Rumble. He doesn't have to wrestle a full match, but it gives him that exposure and gives you another reason to buy into the Rumble. He doesn't win the Rumble, but that sets up one final match with whoever eliminates him in the Rumble at WrestleMania. He does his retirement match at WrestleMania. Maybe he puts over a younger guy. Maybe he wins a match against a veteran. He caps it off, a fun WrestleMania weekend with him going into the Hall of Fame. That's your Goldberg run. Your Goldberg run is on a one-off match against the guy that he really shouldn't lose to.
We might still get that. I don't know. I don't know. It depends on how good he looks in this match. if he wants to come back, can they make a deal? And if they have the right storyline, I mean, even though they're booking this like, hey, you know what, it's his last match. Hey, you know what? Business talks. We know that. Business talks. So if everything hits right, you know, he could come back and he could do another one. You know, it's funny in watching, you know, the whole thing with Goldberg and the excellent job WWE did and the reaction that he got, you know, from the live crowd and for people watching. You know, the rating did well. Their number actually went up for the third hour, which is the first time in a long time that the third hour has been the highest rated hour for Raw. And people were there to see Goldberg make his return. And that's great. Mm-hmm. But I think it also goes to show, you know, how bad of a job WWE has done in making its current talent into stars. I mean, yeah. John Cena is a star. But outside of that, how many other, you know, needle movers do they really have that are bigger than life guys? I mean, they've obviously got some guys that are doing well. But, you know, I still think Roman Reigns is one. You can make an argument about that. I think Kevin Owens is going to be one. I think AJ Styles is one. You know, you could probably, you know, Randy Orton is probably another guy you could throw in there. But who is this bigger than life kind of guy outside of Cena that's a regular with the roster? You know, and I think
the litmus test for that is who can take 12 years off and come back and get that kind of reaction in 2028?
Yeah, but even with a guy that's a regular person with your company, you should be able to make them into a star considering the opponents and the, you know, how much TV exposure he's going to have, all these different things, and they still have fallen short on that. I mean, and there's a lot of different factors, and I understand it's got to be the right person, the right time, the right storyline or whatever, but I mean, you control this. This is not like the fight game where, okay, I can hype up a fight, but you know what? Once you go out there, you want a certain guy to win, and then he gets knocked out. You know, obviously, those things can happen in the fight game. In wrestling, outside of injuries, you control every aspect of it. And yet they have had a hard time, especially now since the brand split, in making their talent into bigger-than-life guys.
Daniel Bryan was that guy, right? He was the guy that kind of came through like a storm and was bigger than life. I don't know who is on the roster right now besides, like you said, John Cena and maybe Randy Orton, who is Brock Lesnar, obviously. But the normal guys in the roster who are bigger than life. Kevin Owens is not there yet. I love Kevin Owens. He's fantastic. Right. He's going to get there. I think Kevin Owens will get there, and I think the matches he has over the next year are going to propel him. But it's not Dean Ambrose yet. It's not Seth Rollins. Definitely not Roman Reigns.
And the funny thing is that I think the brand recognition, obviously, is there for WWE. I think more people than ever before know about WWE, know what they do. Maybe they know a name or two. They definitely know Cena. They know Vince McMahon. Maybe there's a couple of other guys they've heard of, like a, you know, Brock Lesnar or maybe even Undertaker or whatever. When it comes to the current roster, unless you're watching on a regular basis, maybe they don't know those guys. But they know the brand, and I think the acceptance for the brand is out there more so than ever before when it comes to pop culture and mainstream media. But translating that into viewership, into stars, and stars is what generates the business and moves the needle, that has been extremely difficult for them for whatever reason.
I think part of the issue is, so you look at the guys, Daniel Bryan, I will say CM Punk is bigger than wrestling.
Yeah.
Not to the level that some guys are, but that could come back and make a huge splash.
CM Punk more than anybody. I mean, if you talk about, like, who could they put on the cover of 2K next year and bring back to do a match with?
Yes.
The only other big name that I can think of, unless Daniel Bryan was medically cleared, is CM Punk. That's it.
Yes. But those guys managed to kind of punch above John Cena. And I honestly think, and I'm not blaming John Cena for this, you go to your moneymaker, you don't leave money on the table. But I think you have this span from about 2005 to 2013, 14, where John Cena dominated the conversation so much that we had a few other guys rise up, Randy Orton, CM Punk, Daniel Bryan eventually. But I think they pulled back too many guys to feed them to John Cena, who could have been bigger stars. Mark Henry had a moment where he was going to be a huge star finally after years in the business, and then they just cut ties with him and just let him go back down to the lower card, and I don't know why. And you have a number of guys like that who kind of punched up. At one point, R-Truth had a serious storyline where he could have won the title. And now he's opening card fodder that we laugh at because he's teamed up with Goldust, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's just they were so fixated on one guy for so long, for such a long, you know, that it hurt everybody else on the roster.
And you talk about, you know, some of these guys, you know, that have become fodder or whatever. Go over to SmackDown where you have James Ellsworth, a guy that was a jobber that had one line that he came up with when he was facing Braun Strowman that got over with everybody when he says, any man with two fists has a fighting chance. And look what they've done with him. And it's a short-term storyline, and I'm sure it has to continue a little bit longer because he had the match with AJ Styles this week. So last week he loses on SmackDown, and you know Dean Ambrose with a helping hand as a special referee. This match, Ambrose is not the ref, but he's every other role from ring announcer to timekeeper to whatever, and he's just trying to get under AJ's skin the entire match. To they have this moment where James Ellsworth hits AJ Styles with a super kick with the no chin music, because it's been established the man has no chin. Which AJ Styles tried to put a rear chin lock on the man, and he couldn't because he doesn't have a chin. But he hit that move, and people bought it like, holy crap, he's going to win the title. And they did a false finish, and AJ just kicked out. And then, you know, come the end of it, you know, AJ got disqualified because Dean was egging him on, and he you know, was hitting Ellsworth in the ropes, and he wouldn't, you know, break the count. So he got DQ'd, and they're going to have to bring that match again. It's not going to be next week. They're doing AJ against Dean next week. But it's amazing that even in short term, what they've done with a, you know, quote-unquote jobber and getting him over to this level. I mean, you can buy a freaking T-shirt on WWEShop.com with just a face. You know there's already some reports that shirt is selling better than Roman Reigns' T-shirt right now on shop. I'm not making that up, dude. People are buying so this damn glorious James Ellsworth shirt. I hope that guy got a good deal for merch money, man.
It's all in the build. I mean, it really is. James Ellsworth, obviously a flash in the pan. But you look at what SmackDown is doing right with guys like AJ Styles. And AJ Styles got a lot of push from John Cena and from the main roster before they split. But AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, the stuff with Dolph Ziggler and The Miz, it spotlighted guys in a way that we haven't seen in so long. That's what you need more of in that build, right? So you let a guy work his way up to winning the IC title, and then he loses it, but then he moves his way up onto the main event spot. And I think that's what we've been missing for so long. And I hope that SmackDown lets a little bit more of that happen with the brand extension.
And I know that without the brand extension, we would not be getting a moment like this. But in that same breath, I still, you know, I know it's impossible to go back. But hindsight being 2020, I still wonder what they would look like if they had not done the brand extension. You know, if they had the talent that they have right now and the storyline matchup possibilities without, you know, those brand extension.
You mean in 2016 or in 2013?
Oh, right now, like if they had never done the brand extension, like if they had never done it, but they still had the talent between the two rosters that they have right now, you obviously wouldn't get a moment like this with James Ellsworth, you know, because they probably wouldn't have been bringing in jobbers like they've done for some matches between Nia Jax and Braun Strowman. By the way, Braun Strowman beating up three guys this week, including chucking one guy high above the ropes onto his two friends outside the ring, which was just ridiculous. But, I mean, you might not have moments like that, but, you know, you would see, I think, more meaningful storylines and matchups. Look on SmackDown, okay? They're doing Randy Orton against Bray Wyatt, and they're doing Hocus Pocus and whatnot. And, I mean, it doesn't really mean anything. I mean, there's very limited things on each roster that mean stuff. I think if you hadn't done the brand extension, I think you could have made the mid card especially a lot more meaningful. I mean, they did do Miz against Dolph Ziggler, and I give him a lot of credit for that. But we don't see that continuation of a lot of stuff that really has meaning. It always seems like there's one thing on each show that has heightened meaning, maybe two. But outside of that, it's just kind of like we're waiting to get to the point on each show.
So here's where I disagree with you. I think you could have better matchups with having everybody on the same roster, for sure, because it's deeper. You have more people, you have more pawns to play with. But I think what's helped since the brand extension happened is the creative process. SmackDown has benefited most from this, but just giving a team a different chance to show up. It's kind of like what happened with NXT. You brought in some different people into this creative process, a more limited palette to paint on, you can say, a more limited canvas. And I think that has opened up some possibilities as far as Raw is just too long. It's too much. And it hurts the creative process. So I think giving the team on SmackDown the chance to kind of do their own thing for a little while and show up and show off has helped out a lot with storytelling. Now, have they made every decision right? No. Is Hocus Pocus the right thing? Not necessarily. But SmackDown is a tighter show. It is a more entertaining show. And I think the problem is whenever you have a lack of brand extension, when everybody's on the same roster, it's almost like instead of planning for a 2-hour show and a 3-hour show, they're planning for 5 hours every week, and it loses the momentum.
And I still make the argument that they're giving away too much. And I know that each roster is limited, but I for one, am surprised, and maybe there is a reason for this, which I'll get to. I am surprised that next week on Raw, they are going to do a triple threat between Chris Jericho, Kevin Owens, and Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
And I mean, the thinking is Jericho could win that match, and that puts him into the Hell in a Cell match. So they do a rematch. It's not just Owens against Rollins in that match. Yeah. So they could do that. I mean, it's the whole thing, too, with like, so Sheamus and Cesaro, okay, each week they're facing somebody from the New Day in singles matches, and they've each lost a match. But next week, the week of the pay-per-view, like 6 days before the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, they're going to have Sheamus and Cesaro face the New Day in a non-title match leading up to those two teams facing each other on the pay-per-view with the titles on the line. So what does that tell you right there? Okay, most likely Cesaro and Sheamus are going to win on Monday and then they'll lose on the pay-per-view. And that's fine. We know it, but that's kind of hitting us over the head, you know, yeah, with it a little bit. You know, Rollins and Kevin Owens and Jericho, especially putting Owens and Jericho in a match together or against one another, I still think it's too early for that. I mean, I love what they're doing right now. I like that they're teasing a little bit of dissension or, you know, whatnot. You know, they got in each other's face a little bit. Jericho almost called him a stupid idiot. You know, the chemistry is just so great right there. Even when there's angst between them, this is something I don't want to see broken up anytime soon unless they feel like they have to, because I don't know if Jericho's going away for his band or they just got a different timetable for everything, but I would want to drag that out as long as I could. And I still think there's a lot of life. I know that Jericho is kind of, I think he had said it somewhere, maybe on his podcast or kind of alluded to it somewhere, that this angle with him and Owens is just getting started. And I hope that's the case, but I like them being together, even if there's little issues between them. I want to see that last before we actually see them squaring off against one another.
Yeah, I think it's, how do I put this? I totally agree with you. There's too much free content out there. I still think they stretch themselves way too thin. And I think they just find ways to just fill in. It's a lot of filler content at a certain point, right? They're just filling in spots. We have to put another match in here because what else are we going to do with these two teams when they're in a feud? And it hurts the creative process. Again, it's too much. Too much time. They're not as focused on storylines. And I think they're focused on WrestleMania. They're planning out WrestleMania now. They're planning out Royal Rumble, Survivor Series, and the big matches. But they just don't have an eye for some of this other stuff in the meantime.
I'll bring up another point, too. Yeah, really get on WWE here. But, okay, so we saw the talent and we saw the star potential of certain guys in NXT. And it's going to be different when you go to WWE. It's a totally different ball game. It's a different audience and whatnot, okay? But you at least thought Sami Zayn and Neville, I mean, there was definitely potential there, especially for Sami. I mean, there was questions, could he be a main event guy? But definitely should be a pretty good player. Neville, not exactly sure, but, you know, a really good wrestler. And then the cruiserweight division comes along, and you're thinking, well, that dude should be probably a main player in the cruiserweight division at least.
Yes.
Instead, this week, they had him lose to Bo Dallas. And Sami Zayn is going to be facing Braun Strowman, okay? And I think Sami will give him a test, but Braun will come out on top. And you know, it's not the end of the world if guys lose and whatnot, but it really makes you believe or makes you wonder about what WWE management thinks of those two guys in particular. Neville losing to Bo, I mean, you can overcome that, but you know, they don't use him that much. And then when they do, he's losing to Bo Dallas, who's been basically a goof and now trying to do a little bit more of a serious, you know, character. And then Sammy, you don't even we don't see him that much. I mean, I would have been pretty happy if they had just kept those two guys together as a tag team.
Yeah. I think character is a huge problem for WWE. What do they do with the character in the short term? How do they develop them? What do they do with them in the long term? Sammy has become a victim of, okay, he's a popular guy, but we just don't have faith in him to – who is Sami Zayn? They just don't have faith in his persona, the air he gives off. They develop characters in weird ways. Bo Dallas, I really liked Bo Dallas when he first debuted. And now Bo Dallas is kind of this weird – why is he carrying around the sign? He's going around like a positive, but then he's also really aggressive, and it doesn't make much sense to me. I really struggle with Cesaro sometimes, not because of anything Cesaro does, because Cesaro sells it all like a champ, but there's this weird mishmash of he's a secret agent, private eye, but he's also like really intense and really like a strong man. Like he's not – it's just I think sometimes they throw stuff at the wall and sees what sticks. And the problem is they kept throwing Sammy into all these in-between feuds, and he's just doesn't have anything right now.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. When they don't have anything for you and you're in between, that's a really, really difficult position to be in. And I just wonder what they're thinking about those guys going forward. I mean, everybody's got a role to play. I think they could do more with both of them, especially if they use Neville in the cruiserweight division. And Sammy, mm-hmm. I think Sammy could be a very good talent for them, and will be. I do wonder if he could be a main or a world champion. Maybe he can. I think they've got to do more character development for him, but they've got to get him on TV more. That's the other surprising thing, is that we talk about, you know, the lack of depth on these two brands, and yet they can't get regular TV time for Sami Zayn somehow.
And they waste TV time on some really bizarre segments. Like, Sami Zayn is a good talker. He's got a following. Why not capitalize on that instead of putting together the Golden Truth against whatever?
Yeah, man,
we've
got to get the bopping head to sing along with the Golden Truth, man. They are trying to get that over like something fierce, man.
Ugh, gold dust, bopping head around.
Bopping head, man. It's funny you were talking about, you know, getting ready for the bigger pay-per-views that are around the corner between Survivor Series and then the Rumble and then Mania. So we know that the Royal Rumble is going to be in the Alamo Dome. So WWE is hoping to do like 60,000 people, right? Like they have that's their biggest Royal Rumble ever. It was 20 years ago. It was in that building. They did over 60,000. They want to break that record. So you wonder, outside of the Rumble, what other big matches could they put there? Well, AJ Styles earlier this week did a conference call with the media for the 2K Supercard, and he flat out said, I want to wrestle Shawn Michaels at the Royal Rumble. And he said, I could learn a lot from him. I just think it would be an awesome match. It would be, you know, fantastic, you know, all those different things, right? Well, then, apparently, well, AJ Styles found a picture, and I guess it's a fan picture, but it's so well done that a lot of people believe, like, oh my God, WWE made this. This is real. But it looks, I think it's a fan picture. It's a picture of, it looks like a Royal Rumble poster, like professionally done with AJ and Shawn Michaels, so, you know, doing a standoff. And AJ Styles tweets this out. He says, interesting photo. Is it not? Question mark. Right now it has over 4,700 retweets and over 8,300 likes on Twitter. Okay. I don't think this match is going to happen. I will always believe Shawn Michaels is not coming back, but man, he is stirring it up, and good for AJ, man. I mean, he's having some fun with it at least.
Yeah. That's what you got to do. If you're in AJ's spot, you're not going to just ignore this. If there's a potential for a mega match and what some would consider a dream match, go after it, dude. Do everything you can to promote it. Make it happen through sheer will.
Wheel, if you wheel. If you wheel.
There is, that's a big match. It would put
that'd
some
be a ridiculous match. That's not just a big match.
But
I mean,
my question is the match big because it's AJ Styles versus Shawn Michaels, or is it big because it's Shawn Michaels versus pretty much anybody?
Shawn Michaels against anybody would be big, but the potential of the quality of match they could have with AJ would be ridiculous. And on top of that, you're doing it in Shawn's adopted hometown of San Antonio.
That's true. I'm not going to doubt it. I still think the match.
Where's Shawn Jose Michaels, Lothario?
The match Shawn Michaels would have come back for was Daniel Bryan, and that didn't happen. So I think everybody just needs to cool their jets, you know. Kudos to AJ for promoting it. I would be surprised if this gets anywhere close to happening.
I don't think it's going to happen. I've always said that. I honestly do not want to see Shawn come back. He's always said he doesn't want to. If he really wanted to and it was a big match and it was something he wanted to do, okay, that's fine. But, you know, I'm more than happy with him being retired because he went out, you know, on his own, and I totally respect him for that, you know, and he wants to stay retired. So
I felt like that immediately after he retired. I said, you know what? Shawn Michaels, he's retired. He's good. He's done.
He'll be the one guy that says I'm retired and stays retired.
But now that there's some space between it, I'm like, I don't know. I could kind of see something happening.
Well, weren't we all kind of like opening ourselves up when we kind of thought that maybe they were setting up a Daniel Bryan Shawn Michaels match a couple of years ago? And you know, it was funny because I got to talk to Shawn about that, and he had said, no, I wouldn't even be interested in that. He goes, I think the student versus the teacher has been done way too many times. He said there actually was one idea that he was interested in, and it was something weird and totally off the wall that would have had him return for a match that he actually thought about for a brief moment, but then quickly kiboshed it, and he wouldn't tell me what it was.
Mm.
I can't believe you're not telling me, because if he had told me, I mean, people would have freaked out. And he was like, it's not fair, you know, make people think it's gonna happen, because it's not gonna happen. I don't know if we're gonna see the Undertaker again, because so Taker apparently after Mania last year or earlier this year was saying I'm done. He told some people I'm done. I don't think he's officially done, but that was kind of the word going around, especially that European tour. Because remember, he was originally scheduled to be a part of it, or he was being promoted for it, and then he was only promoted for like half of it, and then he was totally off of it, and he didn't do any of it.
Yeah.
Well, now people have seen Taker popping up, and he's been walking around, and some people have even taken pictures with him, where he's on crutches, and so it looks like Undertaker recently had hip surgery. I don't know if he would be ready in time for WrestleMania. If he wanted to have a match, maybe he could. I don't know if he wants to come back. But what he was saying of that was his last match, that may be correct. We may have already seen Taker have his last match. I don't know for fact. But, you know, especially if he's... It makes sense if he said, I've already had my last match, and then he had hip surgery, that would be a good reason why to have the hip surgery now, unless it was something that he absolutely needed to have at the moment. But I mean, it's not impossible for him to come back working after hip surgery. And I don't know if it was a surgery or a replacement. If it was a replacement, it's more difficult to wrestle on that. But I just have this feeling that it's a very good chance we've already seen the last match in Undertaker's career.
There's just still that rumor populating that John Cena versus Taker going to happen next year at WrestleMania.
Maybe. There's also the rumor, and this could be more than a rumor, that WrestleMania, one of the feature matches, could be Brock Lesnar against Shane McMahon.
For the title.
I don't think it would be for the title, but I don't like that match. I mean,
I don't either.
So you're going to build up Brock Lesnar, and then the big match is going to be against Shane McMahon? Super Shane.
Well, I still disagree with the idea that they put Undertaker versus Shane McMahon in this past year as well.
Right.
It's just not.
And they went too long with it, and Taker had to sell too much for it. But
right,
if we never see Taker again, then you know it's like okay, whatever. But to do Shane against Lesnar, I can't imagine that. I mean, I can imagine them doing it. I'm just saying I don't think I'd like it.
It kills the believability at some point, because basically Brock Lesnar should be able to squash him in 5 minutes or less, And if that's not the match, and they're just dragging it out too long to build up fake suspense, and I don't like it.
Especially when Shane's not a regular performer.
Yes. He has no business being in the ring with Brock Lesnar. I could see them doing that at No Way Out in February, or whatever they call that now. Or
one of those things where Brock is just, you know, Shane finally stands up to Brock because he's running amok, he's doing whatever, and he's like, fine, I'll get in the ring with you, you know, I'll try to shut you up, and then Brock just kills him. I can understand that, but I don't think it would be a killing. I think it would be kind of not a 50-50 back and forth, but I think that Shane would definitely get in a decent amount of offense.
I wouldn't like that idea. No, if guys are your world champions who can't beat Brock Lesnar, there is no reason. I mean, this is the same thing with the Undertaker logic, right? There's no reason Shane McMahon should be able to go up against Brock Lesnar in any kind of competitive sense. And that's why you go back to the days whenever they used to have squash matches between Vince McMahon and whoever, right? They get a little bit of offense in, but it's 80-20, 75-25 tops in favor of the guy who's dominant. And you don't do it at WrestleMania. You're wasting a huge match. You want to put a match up against Brock Lesnar that's got some intrigue. I wonder who's going to win. Can he pull it off? The intrigue isn't Shane McMahon is going to get the tar beat out of him. That's not intrigue.
But let me ask you this, though. It makes more sense to do it if Shane says, finally, I'm going to stand up to you. You know, the only way I can ever shut you up is if I show that I've got the guts to get in the ring with you. And Lesnar should maul him. But wouldn't that be a better way to not only to do that match, they're hell-bent on doing that match, but to do it in Hell in a Cell, to do it at next year's Hell in a Cell, to where instead of just having Hell in a Cell, like, oh, it's time for Hell in a Cell, we got to have a couple matches in there, that you actually build up a grudge to where the cell makes sense. And now you can say, Shane says, hey, not only will I face you, I will face you in the most demonic structure possible. In a match that I've been in a match that you have been in, I will face you in Hell in a Cell.
Yes.
I'm giving away booking ideas again, WWE. Again. Free to everybody.
Yep, and that's what's going to happen. They're going to put Goldberg into the Royal Rumble, and I mean, this is it, man. Your WWE card for the next year. Just wait for it.
So on Talking Smack again, another fantastic use of Talking Smack, I think. Baron Corbin got into it with Daniel Bryan. And, you know, Baron Corbin destroyed our man Swags, as we like to call him, Jack Swagger, as he's called up on Up, Up, Down, Down, Oklahoma.
terrible.
So he got whooped by Baron Corbin, okay? And Baron Corbin was going face-to-face with Daniel Bryan on Talking Smack, and he was telling Daniel, like, you got to give me something more. And Daniel's like, hey, man, that's why I don't like people like you. It took me, 10 years or what, I had to work my way here. Nobody gave me an opportunity once I was here. He goes, I lost a match in 16 seconds at WrestleMania. And then 2 years later, I was in the main event of WrestleMania, and I didn't need a GM to help me. I had to claw and fight and scratch my way to get in that position. And Baron Corbin's like, yeah, look at you. It took you 10 years to get here. Look at me. He goes, I didn't have to work anywhere else. He goes, I picked up the phone and I was immediately in WWE. 3.5 years later, you know, I was moved from NXT to where I am right now. So he was being that, you know, bigger than life, smarmy kind of guy, which, say what you will about Baron Corbin, that's what that show is supposed to be for, is the back and forth and create storylines and create intrigue and make you wonder about, you know, where the line begins and where it ends between real and storyline. And I think that those promos come off so well because I don't think anything's scripted. I think they give the guy maybe a bullet point or two, and you just go out there and you do it. And that's exactly what we should be seeing on television.
Yep. Could not agree more.
Good old Baron Corbin, man. Mixing it up.
That freedom is what they need. And the bullet point structure has worked for years in wrestling, and a different platform gives them a chance to exercise a little bit more creativity and build up that experience.
One other thing before we get out of here. Did you see Ric Flair had some comments on his podcast about Goldberg's return?
No. I bet he's all for it. He loves it.
He said, I don't think Goldberg is physically up for a Brock Lesnar match.
Wait. This coming from the guy who was wrestling matches in TNA less than 5 years ago?
Woo!
You're kidding me, right? You're kidding.
Oh, that's a down the line by Rizzo. That one's in the corner. Here comes Fowler around third. He's being waved home. It's going to be a run for the Cubs in the first inning. A 1-0 lead for Chicago.
So
I'm a little bit distracted. I apologize.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah,
okay. So here's the comments
Rick Flair,
from
Brock Lesnar. Yeah. Happened in 2002. How old is Ric Flair right now?
Ric Flair is, oh my God, how old? I know when his birthday is. I mean, everybody knows it's February 25th,
yeah,
which is okay, a national holiday. Well, Ric Flair is 67. Flair? He's 67.
Just ask Google now.
67 years old.
So whenever he was 54.
Right.
He was, no, 54. He was wrestling Brock Lesnar.
Nice. And Goldberg is 49.
And Goldberg is in better shape now than Ric Flair was.
As Goldberg told me, he goes, when I asked him about, do you miss the physicality? And he said, I train Muay Thai 5 days a week, man. That's the most physical thing you could do. Here's Flair's comments. That was a horrible impression. He said, whoever's going to work with Lesnar, whether he's gotten smarter, he's not going to change his style, and he's going to get suplexed. Not just once, not twice, but at least 10 times. And I don't know if Bill's ready for that. You're off for a couple of months, much less 10 years. You're going to get in the ring, and you're going to wrestle Brock Lesnar for the first time around? Ha! Good luck with that. That's just the way it is. His body is not used to it. And Brock is a whole different can that's spearing Ric Flair. Okay? Correct? I mean, I just don't think Bill is going to be physically up for that myself. I mean, it might look good on paper, but God, because Brock is 10 times more aggressive now than he was the last time he wrestled Bill. I mean, he makes some good points, okay? But at the same time, Bill Goldberg, he is a physical beast. He still is, especially for somebody at the age of 49. And you got to think that he's been training for this. Now, I know some people say, well, he looked pretty winded just walking to the ring on Monday. And maybe he was. I mean, but there was a lot of nervous energy. He hadn't been on that stage in over a decade. You know, he was getting ready to cut a promo. So, you know, maybe it's going to be a little bit different when you actually have a match. I think it's going to be like one of those no-holds-barred matches, so they can do all the bells and whistles. They can go outside the ring. They can use weapons. They can do all those different things. They can take calculated breaks in the middle of the match.
Yeah.
I mean, Lesnar obviously is just a physical beast that can't be matched. But it's not like Goldberg is some slouch either.
Right, right.
You know,
and so. I believe that Goldberg is in better physical shape than some guys on the roster who are 10 years his younger. So
probably. I mean, he's still in really, really good shape. And obviously, he's pretty, you know, you get in that dude's face, you get around him, man, and he's quite the presence.
He's intense.
He is intense. So are you watching Toto Bellas?
Nope.
Okay, good.
Next. Pass, Francis. Francis, pass.
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 Did you want to, or should we be getting together to buy Alberto Del Rio and Paige a wedding gift? I mean, a gravy boat, right? Is that what we're going to be getting them? Gravy boat?
I think we're going to buy them 2 tickets to rehab, so that'll do it.
I got 2 tickets to rehab. Oh.
Well, that was mean. That was really mean on my part.
That
and
was
your part.
Very mean on your behalf. Ugh. I mean, that she is recovering from neck surgery, which she just had. We don't know what's going on with her, quite honestly. She got suspended we know about her second wellness policy suspension. She said it was for painkillers to deal with her neck. WWE flat out said, no, that's not true. And it was for an illegal drug. I don't know what's the truth and what's not. She was in Puerto Rico. They were in Puerto Rico this past weekend. Alberto had a match. After the match, she got in the ring. She pulled out a ring. She proposed. He said yes. You know, that went viral. Her father on Facebook then says, I do not support this marriage and, you know, or this engagement. And then 2 days later, he pulled it. And then Del Rio's current wife, who he's still married to, and the mother of his children, said, hey, guess what, honey? He's still married. And watch out for him, basically. I don't know Alberto Del Rio. I do not know him one bit. I have never talked to him. I don't know what the rep is on him. So I'm not going to say anything bad. I mean, if they're really in love and they're happy, that's all that matters. Obviously, there's some things that have got to happen first when it comes to the relationship he has with his current wife and a divorce and whatever's got to go into that. Hey, you know what, though? I mean, people will go nuts on other people for whatever reason. I mean, whatever makes you happy, as long as it's legal and it's not dangerous, go for it. Okay. I don't like to see families broken up, but it sure sounds like Del Rio and his wife have been separated for a while. I hope nothing is too serious with Paige. I hope the surgery went well, and I hope she gets healthy and she does something that's going to make her happy. And if them being happy or being together makes them happy, great. I know there's a lot of rumors and innuendo and speculation. I don't know what's true and what's not true. And until then, I'll leave it at that. I hope it's not rehab for them. There has been some talk that maybe it is. And you know what? If it is something that serious, I hope they would realize it and they would go to rehab.
So they're going to feature this on your point going to this was they're going to feature this love story on Total Divas this season there, right?
Right. Which is going to be interesting considering that she's suspended and he's not even with the company.
Yep.
But he's also, remember, Del Rio is prominently displayed on the commercial for 2K.
Yeah, well, that's advertising. Yeah, he's in the game. But, I mean, to be part of a WWE storyline this far after his removal is interesting.
That's going
to
be very curious. Now, mind you, there were some people that were watching very closely to the opening of Raw this week, and Paige was removed. I believe she was replaced by TJ Perkins. So I don't know what that means. If that means like she's not long for the company, maybe she's not. You know, it sure seems like there could be a separation. But I mean, if she has had surgery, I don't think that would be anytime soon. This could just be a case of, hey, she's not going to be on TV for a while, so let's take her off the open. TJ Perkins is here right now. He's our cruiserweight champion, and she is recovering from neck surgery where she is going to be sidelined for the next 6 to 12 months. It makes a lot of sense to put somebody that's an active every week wrestler on, you know, in that slot rather than somebody that's going to be sidelined for a while.
Yep. I can agree. Could agree more.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Anything
Ryback. Else the Ryback, his great proposal to fight Brock Lesnar.
Oh, yeah. Explain that one.
Okay. So this is great. He was on Busted Open, I think it was this week.
Yes.
And he had a conversation about an idea he says he pitched to Vince McMahon where he claimed he was going to, you know, quote unquote, quit WWE, go train in Las Vegas next to all the MMA gyms for an MMA career and basically make it this big thing about, you know, Ryback was leaving WWE. He's going to pursue a career in MMA. He's training for it. And let this go on for about 6 months, go through the whole spiel where he trains, he does camp and all that. And then 6 months later, heading into WrestleMania season, make his return, a surprise return back to WWE, set up as kind of this new reformed Ryback who has all these MMA skills, to challenge Brock Lesnar in a huge MMA star match at WrestleMania and kind of have this big buzz around it because he's returning to the company and it was unexpected, et cetera, et cetera. And he says he pitched this to Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon did not bite on it, unsurprisingly. He says Ryback says it went over Vince McMahon's head. So
then he was like, what the heck, man? It was like, you know, with a little bit probably more inflammatory term, but was like, that's crazy. He didn't get it. I don't understand. You know,
I heard another match idea he pitched was a Rice Krispie treat on a pole match. So I don't know if that's
really cool. I mean, when you're pitching MMA stuff, that's not in Vince's wheelhouse. It's just not, you know. And, you know, the other thing that he had said previously was that the original plans for Mania was that he was going to face AJ Styles and he was going to beat him pretty handily. And on that Supercard 2K Supercard conference call, AJ Styles said, yeah, he goes, I heard that rumor too. He goes, I don't think that WWE knew what they had in me and didn't trust me yet. And I think that match might have happened or might have originally been the plan, but they obviously changed it.
Sure.
So he did not kibosh that.
Well, you know, it's just, again, a 6 month plan to leave the wrestling company and go train MMA.
That's a tough sell. I'm going to pay you as part of the storyline. And that's something that maybe in past years you would bite on that. But in today's day and age,
yeah,
it just doesn't happen, man, whether you like it or not. I mean, it makes sense from a standpoint of, hey, you disappear for a while, you come back, people are going to be all hot for you and everything. Could you build it up? Could you do that? Yes. Is it something they're probably going to do? No. I mean, there's too many things of, hey, we're paying you for 6 months. We're not getting a return investment immediately off of it. And on top of that, There's the MMA element, which you're just not hot on.
Yeah. I think it's a tough sell. I don't think it's – I mean, again, MMA, not in Vince's wheelhouse, like you said.
Except Vince did pitch the idea that he wanted to flat out not wrestle but fight Dana White in a WWE ring at WrestleMania a few years ago, and Dana turned it down.
Sure. Ryback just – I think Ryback takes things too personally, and he's a little bit – maybe that was a good idea, but maybe you weren't the right guy for it either. That would be a fantastic – CM Punk comes back next month. MMA trained up, you know, he's coming back to where his experience is to fight somebody like AJ Styles or a bigger name. Yeah, I can see that. Anyway,
last thing, we brought this idea before. So when it comes to 2K next year, can you think of anybody else that would be big to put on the cover? That would be a return that would actually get in the ring. Cause obviously Austin's not getting in the ring. I don't think.
But Austin was on the cover.
Who's already
year.
On it. Okay.
Yes.
Who else could they actually get to put on the cover that would get in the ring? I mean, Punk is a long shot, but that would mean a lot. Shawn Michaels would be, but I don't think he's ever going to wrestle again. Who else can you think of that they could get?
Kurt Angle.
There it is. Kurt Angle. That makes a lot of sense.
There you go.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. Man, how did I not think of that? How did I let you have that one? Son of a gun, man.
You were thinking broken Matt Hardy, weren't you? That's okay.
I mean, Jeff Hardy would be a big deal, but I don't know.
The Hardy boys would be a big deal.
It would be a big deal. I don't think it would be as big of a deal. Kurt Angle would be a bigger deal.
Yep.
Hmm.
Okay. Done. Booking that, too. We have all the answers tonight. So
I like it.
We got to end on that note. I know you
work
got baseball
one, two,
to watch.
Two. Oh, I know. I'm watching it right now,
like
man.
I feel like that was my moment. So I'm just going to mic drop here.
You're going to Costanza it, leave on a high note, right?
That's right. That's right.
I can't blame you there. So thanks again, everybody, for tuning into the podcast. We really appreciate it. Remember, you can download on iTunes or in Stitcher, rate and review the podcast. Please do that. That helps us out tremendously. You can also find it on SoundCloud, on Google Play, as well as on the TuneIn app, all the different places that you can find the podcast. So I appreciate everybody for listening, and we will talk to you next week right here, Between the Ropes.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Now you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you. Have a nice day.